You're listening to the Warden Alumni Executive Education Podcast.
Hello and welcome everybody to the Wharton Alumni Executive Education Podcast. I am your host, Alex Gromadsky, and today I'm going to be interviewing Trish Skoglund, who is Corporate Director of Mergers and Acquisitions at Crowley. She was previously in the role of doing operations or being an operator, and now she is in the formal role of doing corporate development. So thank you for being on today. It's great to have you.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, so it'd be great if you could share a little bit with our listeners, a little bit about your history and your story. I saw you worked at BP prior before, a little bit what you do at Crowley as well. That'd be great.
Yeah, sounds good. So I actually come from an operator background. I worked in the oil and gas industry, working in the field in Prudhoe Bay, Alaska. So I lived in Alaska for about 13 years in 2008 to about 2021. Did everything from operations, maintenance, strategy, project controls, and worked both in Anchorage and out in the field in Prudhoe Bay.
Wow, that's really unique. What was it like living in Alaska? I don't know many people that have lived up there, so a little bit about that would be cool as well.
I get that question often. I will say it was just beautiful. The people are beautiful. People are super friendly, and the scenery can't be beat. One of the most gorgeous places I've ever lived.
That's really incredible to hear. So for sure, a place I'll have to come and check out one of these days. And then Crowley is a pretty big logistics company, to my understanding, and probably has many components as well. You're a corporate director of mergers and acquisitions there right now. What does that role entail? Because, you know, mergers and acquisitions are an exciting area, at least as far as I think.
Yeah, and actually, let me step back and tell you how I got there. So in 2020, BP sold Prudhoe Bay to a company called Hillcorp, and I chose to exit. And Crowley has a fuel distribution business unit in Alaska. So I went from upstream oil and gas to downstream marketing for Crowley. During 2020 to 2021, I was the vice president of business development, led a sales team that had been external sales, but due to COVID, it had to go be entirely inside sales for a year, managed that. And then in 2021, Crowley had an opportunity. They were just forming an M&A team in-house. And I hate to say, when they said that it was based in Jacksonville, Florida, the opportunity to go live, you know, half a mile from the ocean and be in sunshine all the day was pretty intriguing. So I took the opportunity and now have been here in Jacksonville, Florida for about 2.5 years. Really love the opportunity with Crowley. I have really enjoyed my time in M&A, getting to be both on the deal side, involved with deals, as well as capital raises. And we manage a small CVC fund. And it's just been, it's been a blast. I mean, just the opportunity in the corporate dev world has been phenomenal. Traveled quite extensively these last 2 years, met a ton of people, both strategics, financial sponsors, founders, startups, VCs, PE-backed companies. It's been a phenomenal learning experience, and just I've really enjoyed my time.
Yeah, and it sounds like you've gone through a lot of learning experiences going from upstream oil and gas to downstream, which, you know, as much as it's still in oil and gas, I think it's quite different. And then now being on the M&A side and also moving to Florida, Jacksonville area. What are some of the learnings that you've had come across the way, either when it comes to moving from completely different climates or moving to different roles and different positions and to a large degree different industries, so to speak, as well?
Yeah, so it does speak to my love for learning. I've always been able to take chances, and whether that's move from Alaska to Florida, I moved from Alaska to Houston. I even lived in Mexico when I was young. So, you know, I've always been one who's taken the adventure just to go find a new opportunity. It's not for the faint of heart, I would say. Moving just on your personal life, it's creating new community, new friends, new family, new churches. It takes its toll. And then new opportunities, right? You get to see new teams, new ways of working. I've been very blessed in this role. I think I've been on a learning journey for definitely the last 2.5 years in this M&A role. Have learned a ton from both my teammates as well as the people in the industry that I meet at conferences. It's been fun. And I mean, I think for anyone who can do it, if their family is able to move when an opportunity comes, I highly recommend it. But just know that it will disrupt your stability.
So you're a proponent of moving just for different experiences, learning different environments, putting yourself out there, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think if it suits you. I think we all go through different seasons of our life where it may not be the time to disrupt your stability and your surroundings. But there's also times that disruption can bring opportunities that we never could have dreamed of.
And what are some of the opportunities that you're seeing in the M&A space that you're focused on right now? How is that role, or what does that role look like?
Yeah, so in September, we announced the signing of a joint venture with another company called Siebel, where we've combined our petroleum shipping transportation business unit with their chemical transportation business. So it was an opportunity to still be able to be on the deal side in oil and gas. I say that the opportunities that are coming remain, you know, the market has drastically shifted M&A even in the last 2 years that I've been in M&A. When I first started in 2021, private equity was taking every deal they could because capital was cheap. They could get the returns back on it that they want, and they were able to see the returns come to fruition. We've now moved into an environment where capital is expensive. PEs are not jumping at every deal. They have a lot of dry powder to deploy, but they can't do it at the cost of capital that currently sits in the market. So you're having strategics come to the table and really look at businesses. I think we're going to see more mergers and joint ventures like the one Crowley just announced. The marketplace is really demanding more from companies, and whether that's technology, whether that's ways of working, whether that's access to markets, companies are going to continuously have to evolve through M&A.
So one part of it would have been the cost of capital going from, let's say, 2% for debt to, who knows, 7, 8, 9% for debt. That would have impacted the M&A landscape in the last few years. What about the oil and gas industry itself? Because to some degree, I think oil prices have come up. Has that helped then in your space specifically?
So we're not an oil and gas operator, so that hasn't directly played an impact. But we are seeing just what, you know, from a shipping perspective, shipping rates have gone up considerably, whether it's for oil or what cargo or whether it's for container. And, you know, and that's just because of the true supply and demand is supply was minimal, demand was high to try to even get. I mean, we all remember what happened at the Port of LA, right? You couldn't even get a ship into the port. They would be like 300 waiting. So I think that it's definitely been something that where we look and say our customers are wanting more services and they're looking for more services to be offered from the same supplier. So how can we be leveraging our services and expanding for the customer, right? It's getting more competitive for customers to meet their consumers' demands. How do we as a shipping and transportation company meet that? That's been our challenge and one that we're really working every day to find.
Yeah, and logistics seems to be something that a lot of companies struggle with. And when I think about just day-to-day for me, you know, Amazon struggles with that last mile delivery and logistics in your industry, I can't imagine getting supplies all around the world. So how complex and involved is that? And how technical is that for your specific role? And when you're looking at M&A, you talked about technology as well. How does technology play into this? And what can you share about the logistics industry in general?
Yeah, so thankfully, I mean, I really rely on the people inside our business to help us understand what is our strategy, where is it we want to focus on inorganic growth, where do we want to put our capital to work, where will it best serve what we're looking to go after. So we work a lot with our internal business customers within the business unit, understanding what does that look like. We work very closely with our senior leadership team, where they have had experience? How does that look growth in their business unit? And then go to market. And I think it's important to understand what is actionable. Not everything is actionable immediately. And just because you want to do it might not mean you can do it. What is with regulations, with changes in the law, what makes the most sense, right? And then where can you get capital to deploy it? So all three have to happen, but it really starts with the foundation of the people I work with internally. And to your point, it's very complex, and I'm not a subject matter expert on logistics, but that's where we go very deep with our internal customers because they are the SMEs.
So what are some of the things that you've learned or some of the most interesting things you've come across? Because you mentioned the LA port store, which I'm actually not even too familiar with, and I don't know how many other people are maybe a lot in that area, but can you share some of those stories that you've had to deal with or how that affects your business or some of the learnings or maybe things you hadn't had to think about that then all of a sudden become maybe more of a core topic within your company?
Yeah, I mean, so the Port of LA was about 18 months ago when we were all, depending on where in the country you were, coming out of COVID or still in COVID, you know, supply chain was one of the big disruptors in the market. None of us could get the goods we wanted. They weren't coming out of China fast enough. They weren't shipping fast enough. And, you know, so the Port of LA was one instance where the inventory got so backed up that they had about 300 ships waiting on the water, and it would be weeks before those could even come to port. So I think it's been important, and the learning for me and my M&A team is really understanding where would we see the most growth as we look to the future of Crowley and we look to the future of kind of our customers' needs. I think that what's been most important is as we rely on our internal business customers is their connection to their customers. How are their big customers' demands changing, right? As consumers have now changed, how is their demands changing and really staying close to the customer's needs?
And from a logistics standpoint, where are you seeing the most growth? Like, is it in shipping, trucking, air? Like, you hear about drones these days, not that that's something you guys play in, but what are you guys seeing when it comes to logistics growth?
I say where I've seen it quite a bit is in the nearshoring, right? As we have all this geopolitical going on with China and Russia, we are seeing really big companies move their operations and their manufacturing closer to home, whether that's Central America, whether that's Mexico. So they have a need not only to shift their entire supply chain as they move, but they also then need to get established, which creates new supply chain routes that maybe hadn't been in existence. Maybe it was coming a lot from China to the West Coast, then it now comes from, say, Central America to Southeast United States. That's a different trade lane, and companies have had to shift in real time with their customers as they're physically moving their operation closer to home. So nearshoring has definitely been a big issue.
And from an M&A perspective, what is something that you're looking at and paying close attention to? And when it comes to sourcing deals, what's your role look like on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis?
Yeah, so I'm glad you said that. So my focus in our team is really focusing on origination. I'm out there constantly talking with strategic CEOs, CFOs, what is they looking like on their outlook? Is this an opportunity for us to partner together, whether that be a joint venture, whether that be an acquisition? Talking with financial sponsors, where are financial sponsors looking to invest, looking to deploy their dry capital, and does that align with the areas that we're looking for? I'm also talking with, out of our CVC fund, I'm talking with founders. Where are they looking to raise capital, and where are they in their fundraising cycle? Are they you know, getting ready to raise their next round? Is it a priced round? How are they doing as we look into the next 12 months? As everybody thinks about whether it's a full-blown recession or whether it's a slowdown, you see everyone kind of tightening their purse right now. Our founders our founders smartly looking towards the future with enough cash runway to get them through the next 12 months. So my role is constantly out there. I'm constantly traveling, constantly talking with people on the phone, video. And it speaks very well to my strength, which is connections. I learned that at the Wharton program is I really enjoy connecting people, and whether that's origination or whether that's just new business ideas. So I get to do what I love every day.
That's amazing. What are some of the most interesting things that you've come across that you maybe had thought of that founders come up with or other businesses are in? Because I come across all sorts of different businesses. I was like, wow, I've never thought of that. Is there anything that you've come across in your space that's unique, or is it more bolt-on type of situations that you look at?
Well, it depends. From the CVC perspective, we have been investing in companies. Like, we invested in a company that I'm a board observer for, ZEI, Zero Emissions Industry. They're a hydrogen fuel cell company. So they are transforming the small craft market for going from, say, a diesel engine to a hydrogen energy company. We're also working with an onboard carbon capture company, Carbon Ridge. We are testing out their first sea trial of their technology to do onboard carbon capture. And, you know, even from supply chain technology, working with companies like Neutral to companies like Repower. I do think that it's in the startups is where innovation happens. And it's the innovation that corporates need, right? So the line for a corporate to be involved with small startups, whether it be through a CVC fund or whether it be through just partnering through strategic partnerships, I really do believe that that is where corporate growth and innovation comes from. And the more corporations are aligned with startups, they'll be in front of that innovation quicker.
Have you heard of many companies having something like a CVC fund? I'm not even too familiar with what those really are, haven't come across them specifically myself. It'd be great if you could share a little bit more about what that is and what that looks like for Crowley and you.
Yeah, and so a CVC is a corporate venture capital fund, and it can be off their own balance sheet. They could have raised the money for the fund. It differs from your traditional VC fund or venture capital fund in that you are, by heart, you're a corporation. So you're really funding your venture capital money out of the corporation, and it's to find the innovation that your company needs. Now, CVC funds are not uncommon. A lot of companies do them. Some may have their own office in which it's, you know, there's a certain amount of money every year that's what that's designed for. They have a team that solely looks at startups. Crowley has integrated our CVC fund with our M&A team. So we're a true corp dev team. And that way we look across the entire portfolio from M&A to divestitures to capital raises and to the CVC. And that way we can make sure where we're plugging in, if one business unit is really just needing an innovation startup relationship, we may be able to meet that through a CVC investment into a startup, versus having to go do an all-out acquisition of a company.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. So thank you for explaining that. So essentially, it's, you know, a budget within the corporation that goes towards startups with the idea that, first of all, that startup might do well, but second of all, it's also something that the corporation might need in the future for innovative things, so you can be a strategic partner down the road to enhance returns of your core business or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that makes a ton of sense. What are some of the core challenges that you've come across in your roles or across your career that you've had to overcome and deal with and had a chance to learn from?
I think we all struggle from learning to work together and communication. As we work with different types of people, how do we work together? I think that has always been one area that I focused on, is really working well with the people around me. As I've gotten older and matured in my career, really looking at people's strengths and how they can together create a stronger team and maybe a stronger output. That's the area that I've really focused on finding the positive outcomes of people's strengths versus just the typical, like, you know, why aren't we working together, right? It's really been seeing people for their strengths and working out of strengths to find an outcome.
So essentially, instead of looking at the weaknesses or things that are going wrong, which could spend a lot of time on, you're focusing, okay, what are the positives here? How do we make something good out of this team, out of this dynamic? And that's essentially a skill that you've had to also, I guess, develop over the years to try and bring the best out of people. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, I think even, you know, it's also learning how, when I approach different personalities, if there's any tension in that, how do I find an opportunity for us to approach that together versus from opposite sides of that tension? And even looking at teamwork differently is truly, are we all on the same side to find the outcome together?
You often find that people are not on the same side, and what would be some reasons why they wouldn't be?
I think people, it's not that they're not on the same side. I think that people oftentimes aren't understanding what is the ultimate goal. And sometimes that goal might just be for us to together come up with an even better idea than the one that we think is in front of us. So it's appreciating people for who they are and what they bring. Yeah,
that's fair. So you try to articulate that goal in a different way to bring that across, so that everyone starts to get aligned. Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, it's less about competition amongst one another and more about how do you see something differently than I did? And could that difference of view be something that actually enhances it together with how I viewed it?
Yeah, and it reminds me of one of the negotiation classes at Wharton. I'm not sure if you took the same one, but it was interesting to see people's different objectives and perspectives and how they had different goals, essentially, and how that can really make a negotiation very difficult just by having slightly different alignments and making sure that everyone's on the same page. So it sounds, I definitely know that it was very hard for me to try and understand and bridge that. So that makes sense. That would have been an obstacle that you have to overcome on a daily basis, especially when it comes to mergers, acquisitions, or investments into startups.
Yeah, and it's funny you bring that up. So I took that same class, and it had Professor Richard Sneal in it. One of the exercises was there were three groups, and we all had to go negotiate for the best offer for ourselves. And what we learned through that is we were all talking about an egg. We all wanted to sell eggs, except not all of us needed the egg. Somebody just needed the shell. Somebody needed the yolk, and then somebody, I think, wanted like the egg in a year and a half or something, right? And too many times I found that I would just focus on I needed the entire egg, and I assumed that the other side needed the entire egg.
Yeah.
But that was actually one of the best exercises I think Professor Sneal could do to show us. Sometimes just asking questions, basic questions of one another, you'll learn so much more than your bias that you had already walked into the room with.
Yeah, such a good point. I remember that exercise now as well, now that you jogged my memory. So it's such a great point. So for anyone that hasn't done it, they should look into that exercise if it's available somewhere. That's really neat on that side of things. What would you say has, or how's your life turned out differently than you thought? Because you lived in Alaska and now you're in Florida. That's quite a big change. And then you lived in Mexico for a while. So did you grow up in the Alaska area? I'm not sure if you mentioned that.
No, I was born in a small farming community in Minnesota, hence the Midwestern accent. But I grew up in Southern Oregon, so I'm a Pacific Northwest girl. And went to college in Portland, did a stint during college in Mexico, enjoyed it so much I ended up staying for quite a bit longer, came back to Portland, went and got my graduate degree, and then the financial crisis hit and had an opportunity to go to Alaska where my brother was in the oil and gas industry. And I mean, when I was getting my undergrad and my graduate degree in Portland, I would have never considered myself working in Alaska or in the oil and gas industry, let alone in the field in Prudhoe Bay, working 14 days off, 14 days on, 12-hour days. But I learned so much. I learned so much about myself. I learned so much about business from an operator perspective. You know, now it's translated to M&A. When I talk to a CEO, I can really talk about his heart for his company, right? This might be a company that maybe he's third generation, or maybe it's his baby that he built out of nothing. And I can sit there and really appreciate the hard work that he's put into it, as well as kind of the work that even frontline workers put in, from both a time away from their family, from a safety perspective, because I've been out in the trenches and done it myself and worked alongside these people. I feel like it's given me such a better appreciation for where people at, and just being able to have those conversations, whether it's with workers in the field or it's with the CEO, CFO level. I mean, that has made all the difference. And I would have never predicted that when I was in oil and gas, how that experience would help me in M&A.
It's very interesting that you bring that up, because it sounds like your operational experience actually helps you better understand what it must be like to run that company, especially if they started that company or grew that company from nothing, because they had to go through all of that. So you're able to, I guess, resonate with the executives that you're dealing with on that side. That must be really powerful for you and them to make that connection and that bridge, especially if you're planning to work with them long term, which would usually be the case in a merger or acquisition.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, my ability to understand the business, where it could be operating better, the validity of their forecast, right? Is it truly a hockey stick, or is there validity in their forecast, has helped. You know, I come from an operator background. The majority of people in mergers and acquisitions come from a finance background. One of the reasons, and one of the biggest reasons I did end up in the Wharton Executive Program, was to shore up that financial backing and financial education. Now, I have my undergraduate and my graduate degree in global business, but it wasn't as focused on finance as someone who an M&A is. And so the beauty I loved about the Wharton Executive Program, and in particular the Advanced Finance Program, is when I sat down with my boss and went through the curriculum, 5 out of 6 of the classes were so spot on with what I needed that it was a natural learning alongside the work experience I was getting. So everything from the finance for executives class that Michael Roberts teaches to Wessel's and his, you know, 40 hours of corp valuation experience and expertise, even down to the venture capital class that I took, getting to understand how VC minds work, because it translates for me for the CVC role that I do. So it couldn't have come at a better time as I was getting on the job experience to then have Wharton come along and help on the formal training in the finance area. I feel like I've come out of the Wharton experience in my role even that much more prepared.
How did you come across the Wharton program? Because you said you talked to your boss about it. What was that like? Did they bring it to you? Did you bring it to them? What was that experience like for you?
So I had been looking for a finance program for quite a few years. Even when I was back working at BP, I looked at some of the bigger schools that were offering like an MSF degree. When I really kind of thought about it, I didn't need to go get a second master's degree. I just needed to go get the finance courses that I wanted to shore up on. And I started doing some research and I came across Wharton's program. And the more I looked into Wharton's curriculum, it was exactly what I needed. The finance, the corp valuations, the private equity, the asset allocations, all of it was right in line with what I was looking for. And so I brought it to my boss and said, hey, this is a certificate program, so it's not your typical graduate or undergraduate degree program, but there's benefits from the curriculum it provides, there's benefits from the alumni status that it will give me, which was very important to me to come out of the program with. And I mean, I think the thing I did not expect, Alex, was the relationships we all would build in all six of those classes. Like every class had 40 to 50 people, C-level executives from around the world. And I mean, this has become some of my closest friends now is through the Wharton exec program. And even the WhatsApp, I'm constantly telling people that the value of the education far exceeds anything I could have imagined.
Did you do your Wharton program online or in person? Because I know I did mine in person, but I was trying to figure out when you were there as well, because I know during the COVID time, some people did it online.
Yeah, so I did mine, started last June of 2022, and I just finished in October of 2023. So I was fortunate to be able to have attended every class in person on the Wharton campus.
Yeah, no, I think that was an incredible experience, and I'm glad you had to have that as well. It really added a lot of value to me, and the experience in the campus is quite something else.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
And you did the AFP program then, it sounds like?
Yeah, I did the advanced finance program.
Okay, cool. Well, I appreciate you sharing a little bit of your story today. Is there anything else that you want to touch on that we didn't get into?
No, I mean, I think the only other thing I'll end with the Wharton Exec Finance program is it not only showed me the financial skills that I was looking to learn, but it also showed me that my strength is connecting people and how I can start to really leverage that strength and even step in and own that, whether that be just amongst the Wharton community, whether that's in my job as I do origination. So I think the program showed me just as much about myself as it gave me the education that I was looking for.
Well, I appreciate you for sharing that. I'm sure the people at Wharton will be happy to hear this as well.
Alex, thank you so much.
No, thank you for doing this.
All right, take care. Thank you.
Thank you.